Okay, so I'm here with Mani Dama, who has graciously allowed himself to be enclosed in a small room with me in India in the afternoon when he was expecting to do something else. Which probably sums up India and the order convention quite nicely at the moment. We expect to be doing something, but we're doing this. But the thing we're doing is of value, I hope. So welcome.
Thank you.
Yeah. So this is the 50 Voices project. We've been talking a little bit about what is this intended to do. I've been enjoying thinking of it as the equivalent of the Voyager space records that are shot into the cosmos, and they're going to just keep going for incalculable periods of time until somebody finds them. And then they listen and they say, who are these beings? This is a bit like that for the future.
Yeah.
So how, if you were describing yourself to somebody in 100 years' time, how would you describe yourself? Mm-hmm. Not your biography necessarily, but how would you describe yourself?
That's a very difficult question, but thanks. I would say just someone who come from rural India, and found a path of the Dhamma. So, and that's just a path that helping to transform myself. And those people coming in my contact to helping them to transform.
So that's quite an image, isn't it? You found a path. And was that something that your conditions in rural India would have led you to naturally
do? Yeah.
You were encouraged to seek?
Yeah. Life in rural India was very difficult. Means just to go back a little at my childhood. Means my parents were bonded laborers. Means they didn't have any means to live, very difficult life. So my father, he used to work on someone's land, working hard day and night. He has to be ready anytime. The masters, they call him to work. And sometimes in 2 days, he used to get some grains and bring to home that my mother used to grind them, make a flour and cook and feed us. Sometimes they used to stay half hungry to feed children. So that was the life when I was born. But fortunately, the similar time, there was a big movement going on in the society that was motivated by Dr. Ambedkar. So Dr. Ambedkar asked people to leave villages, go to cities, go to the towns, get any work, and educate yourself, educate your children. So my father once attended Dr. Ambedkar's lecture near our village in Pulgaon, and he saw Ambedkar from nearly long distance, but he could hear his words, and he says, at any cost, educate your children. So so my father, he left the village, he moved to a nearby town and learned tailoring job, the stitching cloths, and he educated my brothers and me. So that was life in village was very difficult because of this caste system, feudal system, all this economic restrictions because of the Indian social structure. And we were all very unhappy, very unsatisfied by that. Yeah, it is not just mental unsatisfactoriness, but physical pain also, torture also. So we escaped from that. Means at the time of I was born, my father moved to another place. And he educated us. So we did get good education. It was still struggle to get education, but because of the inspiration of Ambedkar, we got good education. My brother, he did his master's, and then he became collector or magistrate, district magistrate, which is very good position, good job. It is started by British. It is called all old ICS. Yeah. Indian Civil Services. So anyway, and I myself also got a good scholarship and education. I trained as a pilot. So I went to Nagpur to learn flying aeroplanes.
That's exciting.
Yeah. So I had my license and all that. But somewhere in my mind, that was what I saw in villages and how that situation, that was going on inside me. And at that time I started to find for some meditation, learn meditation. And similar time, 2-3 things happened in my life. They were my life-changing things. The first thing was when I was at still school, in a boarding school, I heard a lecture by Lokamitra. So he visited our town where I was in school. And he talked about Buddhism and sold some literature. With him, there were two other people. So I bought that literature. That was very inspiring to me because that was a magazine called Buddhayan. And in that magazine, in very simple words, it is written that why we become Buddhist, yeah, what it means to be, and how to be a 100% Buddhist. So I thought, this is very strange. Yeah, nobody told me about being a 100% Buddhist. Yeah, and in lecture also, Lokamitra said that people are half Hindu, half Buddhist, and so on. So we wanted to be 100% Buddhist.
Did your family relate to itself as Buddhist or just as Ambedkarite followers?
They were actually Ambedkarite followers in the beginning, yeah. But with Ambedkar, Buddhism comes. So this is very interesting, actually, because the village I was growing up, the older boys than me, they organized a literary fest in our village. And they called writers and poets from Nagpur, Amravati and Mumbai. And there was a week-long literary festival in the village. It was amazing. It changed many people's lives. And then they discussed many ideas and they sold books. So on that literary fest, a monk also came. And the monk then was invited to our home for food. And that was my first, I think, introduction to some kind of religious or Buddhist things. So he left a copy of Dhammapada at home and translated by himself.
And were you were you attracted to religion in and of itself? Did you ever think, actually the way to change is through politics or social action?
Actually, that was clarified later on. Yeah, when I was looking for meditation, at that time I was in this mood that I was trying to clarify all these things. Because the literary festival and the people around me, they were mostly politically aware or motivated. They were very good in literary things also. This people started to write their memoirs, the Dalit literature, what it is called. So it became very popular. The many writers, they created lots of literature at that time. So, but their literature is mostly like a reaction to Hinduism, yeah, and their difficult life to coming out. But I was not very satisfied with all that. I inspired by that literature. I wanted something more, something positive, something transformative.
Can you remember the first time you meditated? Can you remember like what the experience of like something? What was it like?
When I first meditated, first of all, I was not sure about meditation. I had many questions coming from the Hindu background. I thought meditation is something going in trance or going in something different world. And we try to avoid anything Hindu or anything connected with mysteriousness. But when I first meditated, I felt very relieved, very happy. Happy in the sense, my mind just getting calmer and peaceful, trying to focus on myself. Before that, I was trying to look outside for my answers. But that time I started to reflect back to me. So it was quite an interesting experience at that time.
So you must have been quite impressed by what you'd seen to decide, I'm going to take time off pilot school. I'm going to go on the street because somebody called me.
Yeah.
Because you could easily have just said, maybe another time. So you must have been really like looking.
Yes,
like,
I was looking for, yeah. I was looking for, but I was not sure what I was looking for. Yeah, and how that person called me is that because I went to a lecture by Padmojra a few weeks before that, and that was advertised in the newspaper. So I was standing in my school waiting for my flight turn, and I was reading Times of India, and that there was a news. There is a lecture by Padmojra in that Vihara, Buddha Vihara. So I cycled there myself afterwards. And I didn't know anything about Tri Ratna that time or Padmavajra or anything. Just heard there is a lecture on Buddhism by Padmavajra, and in bracket it was England. So I just was curious what this Englishman going to say about Buddhism. I never thought about that there is a Buddhism in the West at that time. I thought West is all Christian and Middle East is all Muslim and Eastern countries all Buddhist and India is Hindu. That was my thinking. I didn't know the world is so much changed and there are people living.
Oh, I've got several questions around this now because okay. Padmavajra is my preceptor. I've heard his life story. And actually, when you were talking there about just taking the time off, going on a retreat, it reminded me of him talking about going to Brighton Buddhist Center for the first time. He had no idea. And he walked in and it was a double meditation on puja. Oh. And he was just like, there's something about that sort of wonder or like, you know, you just... you discover this thing and you don't let go, like it comes across when you're talking. I was wondering about the thing about, because you already mentioned the British Empire. we've only been talking for 10 minutes. So often obviously in conversations in the order we end up talking about Dr. Ambedkar and the Hindu caste system and all those things. One thing that maybe doesn't get talked about as much is the empire and the whole weird consequences of that that are still running on. Was it strange to find like Lokamitra, Padmavajra, these guys from guys from England?
Yes.
What did you think when you first encountered that?
I found it very surprising. First of all, actually, when I saw Lokamitra, at that time, even seeing a white person was a very strange thing for me. I even didn't know that people exist, this kind of people. Yeah, so seeing him surprised me. A white person, very different looking person. And he's speaking about Buddhism, and Dr. Ambedkar. So that is really very inspiring. And the what inspired me from Lokamitra or Padmavajra is that they were speaking so simple language, so direct. And they were not talking too much. They were not talking too little. Or they were just talking very simple. Why we are Buddhist? What makes us Buddhist? What makes us not Buddhist? And what are the three refuges? And what are the five precepts? And that's it. The talk will end up there. And before and after, you will say several times Jai Bhim, recite the refuges and precepts, talk, and then end.
And did Padmavajra and Lokamitra, did they explicitly talk to the Ambedkar experience from the Dikshabhumi on? Like, we know that you are Buddhists, but it's not, Buddhism isn't in focus. Were they speaking to that? Were they saying, come and be fully Buddhist, like?
Oh, that time they were saying just, come on, be fully Buddhist,
And was that exciting?
That was very exciting. That's why we got attracted, There was a fire in that. Yeah, that was very good,
And your family approved?
Oh, Our family approved before me. Means they were practicing at that time Buddhist, Because particularly in my family and extended family, we were all convinced by Dr. Ambedkar's teaching. So we just believed it literally. Whatever he said to do, we used to do. So we worked hard, we studied hard, we experienced lots of hardships. But it was very clear for us what to do at that time. And we wanted to be Buddhist. So the problem was, in remote areas, villages, there was no one to teach us about Buddhism. I never heard about meditation for many years. I read the word about meditation in Buddha and His Dhamma of Dr. Ambedkar. But for many years, I had to wait to learn meditation.
So you were just waiting for someone to reach over and give you something and then...
Yeah, I can say that,
I mean, it's interesting to hear because it sounds like such a one of those revelations where once it happens, you think, this has always been what I'm supposed to be like. Presumably it had quite a big effect on the way you thought about the rest of your life. Like, you can't be the same way anymore. Did you finish pilot school?
I did finish the school. But what happened is that in 1992, Bhante visited Nagpur. And his visit was very, very inspiring. I got an opportunity to go and collect his luggage on the train. He came by train. So me and my other colleagues, friends, we decided to go a station before, board the train, so that we can take the hold of his luggage. Because when he was going to alight from the train, there will be people, thousands of people in front of him. So we would not be able to get out with the luggage. So we arranged this and we boarded the train. And we saw Bhante, and seeing him was a very, very inspiring experience. Because as soon as we went near him, he looked very bright, very shining and very peaceful and smiling. And each one of us said to him, Jai Bhim. This is what we traditionally do. And he said, Jai Bhim, to everyone mindfully. I thought I am new. I don't know. These my friends, they are well connected. They know everyone. So he will probably not look at me or not say Jai Bhim to me. But he did say to each one, he greeted. So his awareness and his brightness and the metta that coming from him, that I felt, I experienced that with my body, which just not looking at him, but that whole experience was very inspiring. And then in next 4 days, he gave many talks, many places. His program was very busy. He visited a community and we could see him more and talk to him more. So that made me to think, to wonder me, what I'm going to do with my life. Just I'm going to do job, just flying around the world and carrying people, is this the good way to do? Of course, I will get good money, but is that the life I am going to live? So, and then I asked for ordination and I was told that to get ordained, I have to go to Pune, because in Nagpur that time, the Sangha was not yet, fully Sangha was not set up there that time. There were one or two order members. I took some time to decide, because I was doing this training, I wanted to complete it. So I did my pilot's license, private pilot license at that time. And then I went to Pune, and I thought I will come back again and probably I will do. But when I went to Pune, I did the ordination course, I got ordained after some time. And then I decided not to come back to Nagpur. So one of my friend on the ordination course, he asked me, can I join him in Hyderabad to set up a new center? And I was very excited, because I was already inspired by Bhante and all this ordination course was 1 month long retreat. So I decided on the spot without thinking, yes, I will come. And so I went to Hyderabad.
No commercial flights.
No commercial flights and no coming back.
No big salary.
No big salary.
But you had what you needed.
I got more than I needed. So nowadays I fly more than I could have fly as a pilot. So
that's an interesting image. So you feel like you're flying.
Yeah.
In your life, in your spiritual life, you're flying.
Yeah. So
that's good.
Yeah, so I feel more satisfied and happy with my life now, because I could go to UK, I could go to Europe to help Hungarian people there in Hungary, lead retreats, or in India, various places. Afterwards, I worked in various different situations and feel quite happy about that. So many people come to Sangha. Even now also, I'm organizing Buddhist pilgrimages, and many people coming on the pilgrimages are becoming order members. So I was told last month by my friend Maitri Dasa that about 7 people became order members who came on our pilgrimage. So that means whatever I am doing, wherever I am, it is helping people to come along the path of the Dhamma.
You have a sense of Dharma pride about that. Buddha pride.
Yeah.
Just going back to the train with Sangharakshita. There's a famous photograph I remember seeing this, and it just as you describe it, orange robes and light pouring on the window, and he's smiling.
Yeah.
Were your family, were the generation before you of followers of Dr. Ambedkar, were they aware of Bhante's connection to Dr. Ambedkar, or was he kind of like really reintroduced by Lokamitra and Dhammavajra?
The answer is very complicated, because me and my family, we come from a distance village about 250 miles south of Nagpur, far away. It is a remote area. So we didn't hear anything about Sangharakshita. As I said, that hardly any Buddhist we used to see in our village, that area. So no Buddhist there teachers. But when I came to Nagpur, I met many people. So many people knew Sangharakshita before. Even many of his colleagues at that time, they were very supportive to our Triratna activities in Nagpur. Because I used to go by cycle with them. One of them was Mr. M.D. Panchabhai. He's one of the men for organizing the mass conversion ceremony at Dikshabhumi. So I worked with him. He later on donated his land to our center. Yeah. So he knew Bhante. He said, Bhante is my friend. And yeah, he wrote these books, that book. He said, me study this one, that one. This is very important. Sangharakshita likes this. Yeah. So like this condition co-production and so on. It's very tough teaching, but he said, no, you must get your bearings on it. Yeah.
Yeah.
So if you are going to become order member or if you're going to join Triratna, you must know all this. So not only he, but many people knew about him. So some other person also donated a big piece of land in Nagpur for Sangharakshita. This was in 1950s and 60s. So that land, that piece of land was still there and is still there now. Quite a big land.
Is it owned by Triratna?
Yeah, it is recently transferred to Triratna. It is owned by Sangharakshita. I mean, the deeds were in his name. Yeah. So we used to go to raise funds. Like in the morning, we used to knock the door and collect small donations. When I was a Mitra and order member also in my early days in Nagpur. So many people used to say, oh, so you're talking about Sangharakshita. I know Sangharakshita. He came to Nagpur and I got a book. And he showed me a book with his 40 lectures he given in Nagpur after Dr. Ambedkar's death. So many people know him. I met at least 3 or 4 people who personally knew him very well. Or they used to come and stay with him. So he was known.
So when did you join the order which year?
It was, I think, late 90s, 1990. Yeah.
So that's amazing, isn't it? That bridge between 1950s. So yeah. When Sangharaksha leaves India in the mid 60s, 30 years.
Yeah.
Like this arc to you.
Yeah.
And your generation of young women, young men picking up this thing, this torch that's been handed over.
Yeah. One of the incidents I must tell, that when I first came on the attended the lecture by Padma Vajra and went back, I was very inspired by that lecture and I was given the booklet. After reading that booklet, when I went to my room, I was very much moved because Sangharakshita was questioning the purpose of the life. And he was comparing with the life and death of Dr. Ambedkar. So that book made me to question myself. That is actually the starting point about what I shall do in my life. Yeah. So, and later on his visit was the final blow to make the decision. Yeah. So coming back to that event. So after I read that booklet that was given to me, I went to my room and I read and it just made me think a lot. So I became very curious, very much. I went back to them and asked that this man, he wrote such a good, such an important book. How did I not known this earlier? Means I earlier tried to read more books on Buddhism, went to many Buddhist monks in Nagpur. I nearly visited 250 Buddhist temples in Nagpur for my curiosity and collected books in Marathi language about Buddhism. At that time, I was not satisfied. But when I read this small booklet, I was very, very inspired and satisfied. So straightway, I cycled to this friend's house and asked him, why nobody told me about this man, Sangharakshita, and these books? Why didn't I come across? So, and I said that when this man lived, when he died, so I had so many questions and they were laughing at me. I still remember their faces. Yeah. So I was standing in front of the bookshop and the bookshop run by Triratna. It's called Triratna Bookshop. And they were laughing at me and I didn't understand. I thought I might have said something wrong. And they said, no, he's not dead. He's still living in England. So that is very, very strange incident that, because I thought such a great man wouldn't be living more. And the reason for that is that the names mentioned in the book or contemporaries of Sangharakshita were almost all dead. So like Venerable Jagdish Kashyap, his teacher, his name comes again and again in Indian literature. So he was dead. And another person called Rahul Sankrutayan, one of the monks. Another monk is Ananda Kausalyan. So these many monks, they were no more that time. And his name also comes in the similar line. So I thought he must have been no more. So anyway, then they told me that he wrote many books. They explained me, then he's living in England and he wrote few books. So they told me about the survey of Buddhism and then eternal legacy and all that. Yeah, so.
So if you know, this conversation again is like 100 years time, right? Somebody's listening to that story and you think, you went to see 250 Buddhist temples and you read lots of other Buddhist things and then this one little booklet. What is it about that? What was it about this English guy who you thought was dead, must be dead, with all these old references? And he's got quite an old style, hasn't he?
Yeah.
But he writes.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, he writes as if he was born like quite a long time ago.
So, yes.
Sorry, Banti, if you're listening to this. But if you had to sum up for somebody what the difference was, what was it?
Well, difference was that he was just showing you what you needed. He was showing the Dhamma. He was just unpacking the Dhamma. He was not talking about just the words. So there was, as I used the word earlier, the fire. So you could say that the current of the Dharma that I touched there. So in the few words, that was there. Because after that, life was not straightforward. There were many ups and downs, and I also lived in many different places, in different cultures. So, and it's very easy to get tempted. It's very easy to get lost the temper. It's very easy to break the precepts. It's very easy to do anything which is unskillful. And it is very difficult to do skillful. It is very difficult to strive. It's very, very difficult life, tough life to live by Dhamma. So it's a constant struggle. So I think in this ups and downs, the only inspiration of Bhante, yeah, and the way he presented me Dhamma, I think that made me to survive, I could say.
A question I asked Mukhasiddhi, who said something a little bit similar. He talked about having a lot of doubts when he was a young man. He had a lot of questions. And I was asking him, do you still have doubts and questions? And he said, yes. Do you still find, because you were saying that it's hard to practice Shila.
Yeah.
Do you still find it a challenge? It's like you have to guard the gates of your senses and work really hard.
Of course, yeah. There's,
yeah, and you pass that on to people when you're telling them the
cases. I think that is, I don't know how to put it, but each step I have to put very carefully. I have to tread the path, putting next step very carefully. It's very difficult, very difficult, very tempting. There's so many temptations around.
But it's good. It's good, isn't it, when you, because when you teach the Dhamma with that perspective, people listen because it sounds real.
Yeah.
If someone says, you go to heaven. And
I think that's the key, I think, to teaching the Dhamma. That's why I think I was so successful in various places. And even now also. Because whenever I come in contact with people, they get immediately connected and they trust what I'm saying. They don't think that they're listening to some kind of a lecture or some kind of storytelling. It is not like that. They come in contact with the Dhamma. So I don't talk too much like, I just speak very little, but that conveys the message. That's very, gets to the people and people, practice. So.
And are you quite honest about your own challenges and
yes, limitations.
Limitations. You're just there.
Yeah.
Mani dhamma.
Yeah. I tell them how I struggle to practice. So they get confidence that they think, oh, he is not claiming something for himself. He's just struggling like us. So we just help each other.
Hmm.
Yeah.
So who gave you your name?
Suvajra. He's my private preceptor. Yeah.
What did he say about your name?
He said there are two parts in my name. There's Mani and Dhamma. So Mani is like a bodhicitta. So Mani is the most precious objects in the world. Or it is one of the top part of any precious thing. So that's Mani, is the supreme jewel. And supreme jewel is nothing but the bodhicitta. Yeah.
No pressure.
No pressure. Well, first, I found very strange my name. And it took more than a month, I think, for me to get used to it, because my name sounds like a South Indian. So after listening my name, people started to think I came from South India. It is like people disowning me in Maharashtra. So there are similar names in South India, Mani Ratnam and so on, Mani Dhamma. So, and Dhamma is the Dhamma, yeah.
Did you understand why he gave you the name when he gave you, or did it take some time for you to grow into it and think, actually?
I didn't understand at that time why they gave, but I just like the name. And I think I have to develop these qualities, yeah.
And so, now you are Mani Dhamma.
Yeah. So I have to develop those qualities in me.
Mm. So if we were if we were leaving a message for people...
Mm.
An answering machine. If we were leaving a message for people who are going to call us in the future, so what would you say is the most precious thing you could leave with that, with all that experience behind you? Obviously the Dhamma, but like, what is it you as a constellation of energies and experience and challenges, all that stuff, what is it you've got to offer? What's your offering? Maybe not a perfect offering, but what's your offering?
I would just say that I'm saying for myself that I just need to look deep into myself, that what I'm looking for. Yeah, so I have searched for myself. And that resolves all the questions. Often what happens is that we look for answers outside. Yeah. So because of that person I did this, or because of that thing I'm doing this. All the suffering coming to me is by other people. So we think in that terms. But if we think that, what is my role in that? Means what is my responsibility? How much I am carrying the load? So if little of that recognized, then large quantity of our pain will reduce. That's, I would say. I don't know how it sounds, but this is what I have to say, or what am I experiencing.
So that's what you took in with the Dhamma was you were freed to look inside.
That's when I meditate, I see things. Yeah. So, and I work on my mind in that way.
And it's just, it builds up.
Yeah, it builds up. Yeah. Because we cannot control people. We cannot control them, but at least we can control our mind and our actions. Yeah. If it is too much, we can go somewhere else. Yeah. Instead of...
And how do you think you'll be remembered by people?
I don't know.
How would you like to be remembered?
I hadn't thought about that.
Think about it now.
But at least people will say that I have not harmed anyone. And and I was always helpful to them. So, and always authentic. So I hope people will think of that things.
That's important to you, to always be helpful to people.
Yeah.
That is your reputation, isn't it?
Like, I don't know.
Saying, oh, yeah, no, it is. People say, you should contact Mani Dhamma. He'll help you.
Yeah, I like to help. If I know something, if it is useful to anyone, why should I not share it?
Well, thank you for sharing it with the future. Whatever, when we're forgotten... This will be remembered. They'll hear your voice. And
thank you.
Yeah, maybe the next 50 years, the order members who are gathering to celebrate will They'll remember Mani Dhamma.
Well, thank you. Thank you, Chandrasa, for giving the opportunity to share
it's
with
really,
you.
It's really great.
Yeah. That what the date reminds us of. That is the lecture that inspired me.
The lecture is called What the Date Reminds Us Of?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. The Dikshabhumi date.
It is given in Pune on the anniversary of Ambedkar's death.
Huh. Mm. And that made you think about yourself in the perspective of time.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's interesting, isn't it? When we see ourselves in that cosmic.
Mm.
It's amazing.
Isn't yeah.
When I teach meditation to people in America, I quite often say, or we have Sangha morning, community morning, I quite often say, it's a good idea to remember that all we're doing is meeting in a circle.
Mm.
Doing what human beings have always done, which is they sit in a circle and they talk to each other about what's important or what they think's important. And, you know, the Buddha's doing that in India.
Mm.
He doesn't know we exist. He doesn't know America exists. And here we are. And if he hasn't sat in a circle with people, then we are not sitting in a circle here now.
Yes.
It is mind-blowing. Like,
yeah.
But also so simple, the connection,
Yes.
It's nice to think about the Buddhists of the future, isn't it?
It's an amazing project,
It's an amazing project. Yes, thanks, Satyalila. This is a great project.
Thank you.